Mic session number 19594, Reel 4.
Brian's Reel 4.
Well, I think it was lucky that I didn't have no equipment on, because the jeeps, as perhaps you know, are very, very low to the ground. And I threw myself underneath this jeep, and, well, two or three grenades went off around me. So that was the end. We stood there for the night, and there were some more machine gunning going on presently, and further up the on another perimeter. So anyway, next morning, Captain Morris, who was he was a major there in charge of another company, who was my MTO back in India. We knew each other very well, and he said, I've got an apology to give to you, haven't I? I said, what's that, sir? He said, well, he said, it's my men that let these Japanese in last night. He said, we've just about finished standing two, he says, and we see these people walking about, and we didn't realise they were Japs until they'd got past the perimeter. He said, and if we'd have started firing then, you know, our guns have been firing at our own people. So he said, so we're all ready for them for when they came out. So I said, I'm all right anyway, so thank you. So anyway, that was that. Next morning, we never had no trouble with the Japanese at all that night. We was perched there. Next morning, the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Welsh took over this position, and we had to go back to our battalion, two companies. So we never left until about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, all late in it. It was getting dark. And it was pouring of rain. And I had these jeeps, and the two companies, so one company went first back, still through enemy-occupied country. Then we had the jeeps and the traders, and then the second company come behind. Anyway, I don't think we got more than 2 miles away. Oh, and the Welsh had taken over our positions by then, the Royal Welsh had. So I don't know if I've got more than 2 miles away, and my jeeps, the traders was turning over, just like these great big ruts, and was all wet through. So I said to, and then of course we was messing, because the whole columns had to stop while we reloaded and turned the jeeps back again. And anyway, Captain Morris was getting a little bit upset, so he said, what we're going to do about it. I said, we should go, the jeeps and trailers should go back to the Welsh lines and stop there and try to do it again tomorrow. He said, well, that's not the orders, Brian. He said, but I think it's a good idea. So he said, you better take, he said, I'll give you an escort of 10 or a dozen men, I forget it was. He said, you get the jeeps back to the Welsh. Which I did. And of course, we had a job to let the Welsh know that we were English troops coming in. And I shouted, this is the Worcesters coming back, this is the Worcesters. And of course the Welsh had been fighting all day long to get to us. So anyway, they let us in, and there was no more trouble there. They only had one or two scores. But our two companies apparently they were going that way, and a Japanese column was going the other way, and they bumped into each other. And they had a hell of a skirmish together. We lost some men, they lost some men. Anyway, they carried on forward. So it was rather lucky we didn't have our jeeps with us that day. So anyway, the next day, they said, right, they had the company had the orders that we had to go and rejoin the battalion. And we rejoined it without any more trouble. We went right way through the lines. We could see where they'd had the fight the night before, or the day before. It was the night before. And we got back to our Worcester lines quite safely. So that's another little story.
Have you any idea which month this might be that you've reached now? Or where you were?
Yes, it was between the two rivers, before we met Shirawaddy and after the Chinwin. Well, as we reached Shirawaddy. So that would be, February, March, I should think. And I went on a foot patrol. I went. We just captured this village, and I went. I wanted to see one of the fellows who was a mule. Mule is here, and there was three or four, four or five standing there, and As I speak to him, along comes a sergeant, and he says, you are on patrol. So I said, I can't, you must be joking. I said, you don't mean me. I said, I'm MT, motor transport. He said, I don't care who you are. He said, I've been told to get 12 men, he says, for a patrol. He says, and you're on it. He said, be in 5 minutes, he said. All right. Full fighting order. So there was another MT fellow with me, George something. And off we goes on this foot patrol. So we went in Indian file, and, you know, in single file. And then what we used to do is two men was scouts, right, well in front of the... So this officer in command, he'd only just come out of Burma. He was in England a week before. He never knew now because he asked us what the Japanese looked like. So, as we're old soldiers, so... Anyway, he sent us, George and myself, on... We were the scouts, and the rest of the section came there. So we're going along with George and I together, and George says, Norman, he says, look at this, there's a movement up there, up in the hills. So, well, it was Japanese up there. So, I said, look, as soon as we get a little bit of... Well, we can hide a bit so they can't stop see us. So I said, we'll stop and wait for the rest of the section to follow us. So he stopped. The officer asked us what we stopped for. We said, well, there's Japanese up in the hill, sir. So he says, well, he says, carry on as if you haven't seen them. That's all right. Carry on as if you haven't seen them. It's all right. We had to go on them. Anyway, George said, the buggers have hit me. I said, and he got hit here through his shoulder. But it didn't hurt. His wearing purpose, and I pulled it out for him. I pulled the bullet out. Never penetrated him. So we stopped again. The officer says, what's up now? George said, well, I've just been shot, sir. So with that, then the officer, he done something, and he got shot in the eye. So, of course, that was the end of our patrol. We went back then. That was another little patrol.
Were you often out on foot
patrol? Oh, yes. I've done a lot of jeep patrols. I remember doing a jeep patrol. See, these patrols, we was only probing for the enemy. We never wanted to... Well, no, soon we contacted them, we had to come back. I never forget one. I was driving a Major Tipler, our second in command. He was on it. We was driving and there were some bushes in front of us, like they might be there, and all of a sudden the machine gun opened up firing out on my jeep, and they missed, and I threw the jeep out of gear and threw myself down in the bushes with my rifle. Oh yes, so I've done quite a few jeep. There's a special one, I can't think of it now. I might think of it personally.
What kind of terrain were you in? What was the vegetation?
In places, Burma's a very funny country. In places, it's like the Swabo Plain is like India, you know, full of no vegetation at all. And then all of a sudden you run into these jungles, which you can't penetrate. See, the biggest trouble was with the jungle, we'd go in here and this would be all jungle. And you'd think the road would be there, wouldn't you? I'd see a road come out the other way. Well, we'd think, but the road actually come this one. It wouldn't be the same one. And, when we come out the jungle, and the aircraft are taking photos of, we come out, we'd be on the wrong track. Oh, and then on Christmas Day, the battalion actually lost itself. The 2nd Battalion of Worcestershire Regiment was lost on Christmas Day, 1944. Anyway, it finished up with the mules and the jeeps leading the battalion. The battalion was somewhere else and we didn't even know where they were. And the boys were saying, Malum babes in the wood. Malum means understand. Malum babes in the woods, that's us. We're lost in the bloody woods. Anyway, whole of Christmas Day we were lost. We couldn't find the transport and the mules somewhere in the jungle, and the rest of the battalion was somewhere else.
So is it just your little part of the who got lost?
I think the whole battalion got lost. In fact, what happened, I think the battalion was going forward, and the jeeps and the transport took a wrong turn or something, and it all went wrong. Anyway, we were going to attack this village again. If the Japanese realised that it was only the jeeps and the mules there, they'd have stopped them. They, at the last minute, they fled, the Japanese did. So we were rather lucky. So that was our Christmas Day on 1944. 44, whatever. 44. Mm. Well, then, of course, I suppose we crossed the river. Oh, and that would be Swabo playing when I told you earlier that we captured Swabo, and the next day we see all this dust and dirt well behind us, and we could see that something was coming. We thought it was the Japanese coming up from behind, and we send patrols out. One, I don't know, I don't think we fired nothing. And anyway, the patrols come back and said it was the Royal Scots was behind us, the Royal Scots Regiment. So anyway, up comes the captain or the colonel of the Royal Scots and said to our colonel, he said, the Royal Scots have just, to inform me, sir, he said, the Royal Scots have just captured Swabo. And our colonel said, excuse me, sir, he said, but the 2nd Battalion of Worcestershire Regiment captured Swabo yesterday. So a little bit of bad leisure. Oh, and again, our division, the 19th Division, we were the foremost division for a long, long while, because we never had no heavy stuff. We didn't, heavy machine guns were the heaviest thing we had. And we manhandled our jeeps and trailers. So we never had no big stuff, no big guns, no tanks, no nothing. But the 2nd Division was well behind us at this time, and they had everything, the 2nd Division, marvellous. But they were nowhere near us. Anyway, this evening, we was well up in the fore and been fighting all day long. And that night we heard this thunder and lightning going on over on our right. And to start with, we thought it was a thunderstorm. And then somebody said, it's the 2nd Division have called us up, was it? Over on our right. So lo and behold, as our division was there and the 2nd Division was there, we closed up together. And there was the 2nd Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment in the 19th Division there, and the 7th Battalion of the Worcestershire Division from the 2nd Division was there. So the two Worcester battalions was then actually fighting along side by side. And anyway, I don't know whether it is General Simmel, anyway, he said it was such an auspicious occasion that he gave us a day off. He said the two Worcester battalions can stay there, and we had airdrops, we had cigarettes and drinks dropped us by air, and we had the day off, the two battalions. And of course there was brothers and uncles and cousins and everything, because Worcester's not a very big place, as you know. Of course I was a Hampshire man, it didn't mean nothing to me. But it was a very memorial day. And the next day we went up and joined our different divisions, and never did see them again.
Were most of the men in your battalion from Worcestershire?
They were mostly from Worcester, yes. Except in Hampshire, they had two or three. Well, by then, of course, when I joined them, they did have a lot of outsiders in, but they were made up. They did try to keep the Worcestershire regiment, Worcestershire people, as much as they could, I think. No.
Were they much different from Hampshire people?
Oh, no. Only I couldn't understand what some of them talked about. They used to call me the fellow with a southern drawl. Because they never, you know, they had this Birmingham, Worcester, you know, they talked. And I couldn't understand half what they said half the time. But they were damn nice fellows. And then, of course, I suppose the next thing is we crossed the Irrawaddy.
How was that done?
That was done in little boats. Little tiny boats. And you must remember the Irrawaddy is a mile wide, at least, in some places wider than that. We got Shell going over. Anyway, we got across the river and dug in, and that's where, well, they say some of the worst fighting of the campaign was there. We've done our bridgehead the other side, the Irrawaddy, and the Japanese attacked us, I thought it was about 10 days on a trot, day and night they was attacking us. And then by then I think the second division had further up across the river and took a lot of pressure, so we lost the pressure then. So then the division made towards Mandalay. We were on the other side of the river now, on the Mandalay side. And we were fighting then every inch of the way to Mandalay.
Whilst you were fighting in Burma,
yeah.
What were your living conditions like? Were you in much discomfort?
Oh, we had no living, nothing at all. All we had was a blanket.
Sleeping on the ground?
From the time we walked marched into Burma, shall we say, we never had no tents, no nothing. No accommodation whatsoever. So all the time we was in Burma, we were just, with a blanket.
Did this make you miserable or not?
No, I don't think so. It's frightened, shall we say? Excited? Put it all together? I was like, we've been shelled very nearly all the while we've been shelled. And very nearly all the time we've been attacked by the Japanese. And by all the time we were now advancing towards Mandalay.
What happened when you advanced on Mandalay?
Well, we got to Mandalay. And there's this great big Fort Dufferin, which was each of its walls was a mile long, roughly a mile long, and outside them there was a great big moat. Great big moat was about 50, 60, 70 yards wide, I suppose. And that was right round the fort. Anyway, the Japanese made a stand there, and they fetched up the great big heavy guns. Well, the fort walls was banked up from behind. And we had these big 5.5 guns blazing away at them and never made no effect at all. We tried to cross the in boats and couldn't. The Japanese was the other side. So I suppose we were there, I think, about 10 days, I think, we were there trying to get in. So the next thing they said was going to bomb the wall with flying fortresses. So anyway, the morning of the flying fortresses come, they said, as the Worcesters was right almost outside the walls, we was watching the walls of Fort Dufferin, you know, from 100 yards, 200 yards away, or less than that. We dug in watching. And anyway, just before the air raid, they told the battalion, for precaution's sake, to go back about another 100, 200 yards. So back the whole battalion goes. And anyway, down come the Mitchell bombers. And I looked up and I said, these bloody bombers are going to hit us. I could see them all coming down in great big clusters. And that's coming like that, coming straight at us. So I ran to the left. Because it takes a long while to come down these bombs, so I started running towards the tree there, knowing that I was going to drop more almost where I was standing. And anyway, these bombs all started dropping, and I got under a tree, and now I got under a basket. There was a basket there. Talk about a man clutching a drowning man clutching a straw. Here, and I got a blooming wicker basket over my head, and great big lumps of dirt was coming down. Anyway, lucky enough, nothing touched me. So, we got over that. We had casualties, of course. And an officer came up to me and he says, you know where the colonel is, don't you, Brant? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, go and tell him what's happened, William. So I said, all right. About a mile out, 2 miles outside of Mandalay, it was a little village, and the colonel had one of the companies on parade there. And he was given a real rollicking for being undisciplined. You see, he wasn't going to have, you know, discipline was failing, he was saying to them. And I stood there by the parade ground, you know, frightened and deaf to talk to him, because he was, well, he was the colonel, you know, nobody spoke to the colonel. So one officer see that I was a bit agitated, see, and the colonel was still ranting at this company, you know, for being not highly disciplined. He didn't know anything going on, so this young officer come up to me, he said, what, can I help you? I said, yes, I've got to speak to this colonel, please, sir. He said, what? I said, well, sir, the battalion's just got bombed. So with that, he goes up the colonel, and the colonel comes over to me. Now, what's all this all about, Brian? He says, the American bombers have just bombed the battalion, he said, how many casualties? I said, quite a few, sir. He said, how many? I said, I don't know. So he said, you should know. So he said, get in the Jeep. So, of course, we get to the Jeep, and I drive him back to Mandalay. Anyway, I don't know what he done there, but then another officer come up to me, and he says, the Japanese have put the white flag up outside the fort. So look, there's a white flag flying. So he says, drive me in. He says, well, he said, we'll make history. He said, we'll be the first people in the fort. I said, oh, no. I said, my command officer wouldn't allow me to do this, sir. So he went, anyway, we didn't do it. And I don't know whether he did or not, but we did. I did hear that the first Jeep in the fort got blown up. Whether it was this fellow, I don't know. Anyway, there was quite celebrations. Lord Mountbatten came, General Slim came, and we had, the first time was anything like we smartened ourselves up for the occasion. So that was the capture of Mandalay. And General Reese, our general, he said, you've all heard of the song On the Road to Mandalay. He said, now, he says, we're going to start singing On the Road from Mandalay. He says, from now onwards, he says, it's from Mandalay to Rangoon. So that was another little episode. So we start the game then.
What was the attitude of you and your comrades towards the Japanese enemy?
Bitter hatred. Bitter hatred. In fact, we were told not to let them capture us, because they were barbaric. And this is why I think that, you know, the hatred is still there now with the old soldiers.
Why did you feel so much hatred towards them?
Well, it's the things they done. They tortured the boys. Obviously, I remember hearing a fellow screaming all night where these Japanese was torturing him. And I must tell you that, I don't know if it makes a joke, just before going into Burma, we had Lord Mountbatten and all his people all come round giving us pep talks on how bad the Japanese was. And anyway, with these, the Brengun carriers of the Gurkhas, who I knew very well naturally because I used to help them out a bit, one of our fellows went to the Sid, it was a, saying, you know, how terrible the Japanese, the Tauruses, they've got up to. So, anyway, they weren't interested. So he goes up to the officer and says, one of Mountbatten's officers. He said, I'm trying to give your men, he says, a pep talk, he says, and he said, they're not paying no attention to nothing. He said, can't they understand? Isn't my Urdu good enough or what? Oh, yes, he said, your Urdu's good enough. He said, what they're going to do to the Japanese? He says, it's nothing compared to what you said the Japanese done to us.
But where did you hear these screams?
Well, out in the jungle, between us and the Japanese line. We must remember that our lines was only a matter of, well, there was only back to the other side of those trees there, the Japanese. We were all very close all the while.
But how did you know it was a British soldier being...
Well, he's speaking Shelton English.
So, what happened on this advance from Mandalay to Rangoon?
No, it got easier then. Well, we went to Mike Taylor, which was a very big battle. We had a very big battle at Mike Taylor. And I suppose we're getting on towards May now. Would it be May? I suppose so. April, May. And... really, the Japanese had fought their last real major battle. They were more or less, although, as they say, you know, one Japanese, you know, would not, they wouldn't give up. You know, there was no giving up. They just fought to the last man. You know, they'd have to be winkled out of every little hole. And they never did give themselves up. They'd rather be shot or killed or anything. So really, after Mandalay and then Mike Taylor, which... Oh, and then, yes, we did. We had rather... We went into China then, Mamio. And we met, the Chinese army was stopped at just the other side of Mamio. And they didn't come down this staircase into Mandalay because the Japanese had held it. So we had to clear this road from Mandalay up to China. So we had a job of clearing that, going up the mountains into China. So we just got into China.
How difficult was it to clear that road?
Not very difficult, because as I say, after we really took Mandalay and fought Dufferin, I think the Japanese was really a spent force. They were in, you know, not real big, no big worries. Although they were still dangerous, of course. And because then we sped down to right away the main road, right away down to Rangoon. And, well, we get to Rangoon, and then the atom bomb was dropped.
What did you find in Rangoon?
A lot of what in them. Well, it was bombed badly, of course. The Japanese soldiers had gone back towards Malaya, back over the towards Thailand. Most of the Japanese, very few Japanese soldiers, lots of Chinese. And that's about all, I think.
Was it in a state of disorder?
Oh, no disorder at all. They, in fact, the everybody was pleased to see the British troops. And, but we never done that. There was no money. We never had money. There was nothing to buy. There was nothing to do there. We couldn't buy nothing. No celebrations, nothing like that at all.
How did you receive the news of the atom bombs?
Well, I think we're all more than pleased. We're celebrating it. We never, because, oh yes, and before that, when we took Rangoon, we started then on amphibious operations. And we were going to go into Japan. We were going to be the first troops into Japan. And they told us that our casualties was going to be at 80-90%. So we weren't looking forward to that at all. We'd just come through one battle, and we weren't looking forward to that. So we was doing amphibious operations off of Rangoon when the atom bomb dropped. So, of course, we were more than pleased.
Mm. Did you then stay in Burma, or...?
No, yes. Then, no, I...